Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
It's sci-fi and Squeam Gym, but not as we know it. On Joy 94.9.
One station in all the world, a chosen station.
To boldly go where no show has gone before.
Sci-fi and Squeam.
On Joy 94.9.
Sex. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And tonight, yes, sex. So a bit of a warning to those who can't handle it. If it's too hot to handle, sex and sci-fi, a manga, some anime perhaps, if we have time. And we also have some great guest interviews as well. And of course, Mitch is here.
Yeah, am I a guest?
You what? Are a guest.
I'm a guest, yeah.
We
so
shall
aliens
interview.
Took me away.
Did they, yes.
And they did nasty things. Did horrible things. So now I'm really experienced in sex.
Cool. Interesting, yeah. Sex, I'm sure. So warning to every listener out there tonight on Sci-Fi and Squeam here on Joy 94.9. We also have the president of the Australian Sex Party in the studio too, Fiona Patton. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Sonia. Thank you, Mitch. Yeah. Very pleased to be part of the fun panel.
The sexy panel. And this is, well, technically the first time you've ever been actually in the studio for Sci-Fi and Squeam, so it's an honour to have
I
you.
I know. I am a sci-fi virgin. Mm. Well, no. I've practised at home, but haven't actually done it in the studio. So
people
I'm a bit nervous.
Throw that word around so casually, virgin.
Studio. What else have we got? We've got a little bit of an interview with someone called Andy McKenzie, and he's over here very shortly for Supernova, both in Melbourne and then in Brisbane, and here to talk about Sushi Girl, which is this cult movie that's coming out very soon.
In just a few minutes, in fact.
We've also got Mark McClelland, who's from Wollongong University. Of course, he is an expert in sex and Japanese culture. So we spoke to him earlier today a bit about exactly that, including manga, censorship, and
hentai. I can say
hentai.
I've had experience with Japanese culture.
Right.
Right,
what
yes.
sort of culture? So he's part of the School of Social Sciences.
Not one that needed antibiotics.
And gender studies. He's a professor of gender and sexuality studies. We're having far too much fun in the studio tonight. And then geeks out a bit later on. In the evening, Geeks Out, talking about something called Dreamweaver, and that's a special auction, art auction event they've got coming up this Thursday in New York. If you happen to be there, go along and support our community, our geek community.
I love Geeks Out. Mm. I love Geeks Out. Do you want to just jump straight into the interview with Andy that you did earlier?
Yeah, why not? This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy. Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And on the phone here... tonight we have Sushi Girl's own, one of the great cast from this very interesting movie, and that is Andy McKenzie. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Excited to be here.
And you're pretty much going to be here for a couple of amazing things, and that is the Supernova Pop Culture Expo, first in Melbourne, I believe. Coming up April.
Correct. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for that. We'll be in Melbourne. I think we'll be there Friday, actually, through Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We're going over to the Gold Coast for the film festival and Supernova. So, yeah,
that is exciting. Look, Supernova, they've got some great guests, and, of course, you'll be one of them. So that's April 12 to 14 at the Showgrounds in Melbourne. And then, like you said, onto the sunny Gold Coast in Queensland, at the Convention Centre, 19th to the 21st of April, and that's for the Gold Coast Film Festival.
Yeah, we're doing the Australian premiere on Friday.
Wow.
19th.
Okay.
9 o'clock, we're doing a Q&A before the film, so that'll be fun. We're doing it on Saturday night also, actually.
All right, now it's really got a whole heap of you from the cast are going to be present, I believe. Is that for the premiere as well? So you've got Tony Todd from Final Destination franchise and Chuck and many, many other things, and the Candyman himself. Noah Hathaway, I mean, he's a favourite from way back as Atreyu in the Neverending Story. James Duval, of course, from Donnie Darko and many other things. Independence Day, Ken Kern Saxton, I should say, and Destin Pfaff. So, hey, and yourself.
Right. Yes, we've got Kern Saxton, the director and writer, and Destin Pfaff, who's also one of the writers and producers. So, yeah, we've got a good group of boys. It's a boys' trip.
It's the boys' trip. There's one missing. Luke Skywalker's missing. I mean, that's a bit disappointing. Mark Hamill. Now, Andy, let's talk about your own career, of course. Apart from Sushi Girl, which has been called basically a almost an emotional zombie film, says Michael from Sound on Sight. Now, that's interesting.
Right.
Any brain eating? Any brain eating we should know about? Or
oh, man, it's definitely, it's pretty anxious, it's violent, it's pretty dark, it gets pretty paranoid, there's plenty of confusion, suspicion, torture, lots of blood, and screaming!
And nori rolls, and seaweed, and rice.
What's that?
I said sushi, and seaweed, and rice, and...
That was actually one of the perks is eating sushi off of a gorgeous naked girl.
How did she feel about that?
Yeah. Oh, she was wonderful. I mean, she just sat there. She sat there, no problem, for 17 days. It was funny. Oh. I mean, we didn't really pay much attention either. I mean, it was, you know, she was kind of a prop.
Part of the furniture. Hey.
And then you just, yeah, exactly. And you just kind of forget about it. And here we are just doing all these, you know, crazy things around her.
Mm.
So and then she's,
yeah. Look, so speaking of crazy things, what can you tell us about what Sushi Girl is about without obviously spoiling it for our listeners who are dying to see this one?
Basically, Sushi Girl is, it's the aftermath of a diamond heist gone wrong.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
The bag man, who's played by Noah Hathaway, Fish, he got caught, he went to prison, he kept his mouth shut. 6 years later, he's out, and he's brought to his welcome back party, which is basically a sushi party served off a naked girl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's five of us, and the five of us started asking Fish nicely where the diamonds were, but alas, it goes south pretty quickly, ending up in anger and torture.
The boys, yeah, a little bit too much testosterone there, sounds like.
Yeah, there's plenty.
Cool. Now, it has been compared to Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs, or Reservoir Dogs as the proper pronunciation, but in Australia, for some reason, we call it Reservoir. How do you feel about those sort of comparisons? It's pretty serious.
I think it's a great compliment. I mean, absolute compliment. I mean, he is, you know, he's the icon of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction and Guilt Hill and getting all these great movies done.
Hmm.
And this is, you know, it's in that same vein, but it's a little different. I mean, you can kind of, you know, put them next to each other and you can kind of draw similar comparisons, but there's definitely something different with Sushi Girl. And it's you've got to be in the right mood and the right mind to watch it and kind of, you know, it's alone.
It sounds like it is borrowing a lot from almost a grindhouse cult classics. It does mix with almost a spaghetti western or
movie is a cult in the making. Hey, it's Annie McKenzie of Sushi Girl listening to Sci-Fi Squeam on 94.9.
Sex and Squeam. I mean, Sci-Fi and Squeam.
I mean, Sci-Fi and Sex.
Sci-Fi and Sex, that's it. So that was Andy McKenzie we spoke to a bit earlier in the week about Sushi Girl. And it sounds like a very sexy film, actually, eating food off a very attractive person. Sounds good to me.
Happens to me all the time.
I bet it does. That could be why you've got a smile on your face.
But it's always, like, really gross foods, like porridge.
Right. I don't think we want to go there, really.
It's never anything like sushi. I never thought of sushi.
No, well, you know, delicate with the chopsticks.
You can't eat porridge with chopsticks.
Now, tonight's show, of course, apart from that interview with Andy just then from Sushi Girl, we are talking about sex and sci-fi where possible, and particularly we have Fiona from The Sex Party here in the studio. Now, Fiona, yeah, let's have a chat about what the latest is.
I'm sad to say that it just keeps getting worse.
Sex does get worse.
Actually, please, anyone out there who knows what I'm talking about, no, it's not getting worse. It's fine.
I know. Good sex is hard to find, and once you get it, you keep it. Hold on to that stuff.
I think what we're seeing in Australia is, you know, governments, sadly, and government officials such as customs officials and classification officials completely ignoring the fact that the community has moved on, that the community is extremely diverse, multicultural, and has this thing called the internet. And people have been looking at
it's in a box, isn't it? The internet. With a little red light on it. Yeah, I've seen that.
Sonia doesn't know the internet.
This is becoming apparent, actually.
She's seen it once, yeah. So
we're seeing, you know, customs officials seizing people's personal collections, you know, whether it's personal DVD collections, personal films that they've brought in on their iPads or something like that. It now is illegal in Australia to bring in a film or publication or image that would not be classified in Australia as suitable for Australians. Oh. Now, I can tell you now that no Italian tourist, no Japanese tourist, no Chinese tourist, not even an American tourist knows what the federal government, and these were laws made under John Howard's era, what that federal government thinks is acceptable. So we're seeing things being seized, you know, as people get off planes, but also when people mail comic books or order comic books online.
Yeah, that is an issue. I mean, especially with Japanese manga as well.
Well, that's right, and that really raises, that was the case that we've just recently ran. This young student from Melbourne, he brought in ordered about 26 manga comics online. Came in 15, they released 11 of them and seized 15. And it was just the most random seizure. You know, they would allow, you know, issue one of a certain story, but not issue two, even though it featured exactly the same characters. But they'd say, oh no, they looked a bit younger in issue two. You know, it was these incredibly random cases. And when I looked at the work and looked at what they had allowed through and then what they'd seized, we decided to challenge it and we took them to court and took them to the magistrate's court and ordered that, because when they seize something, you have to sign a piece of paper saying, all right, you seized it, I'll let you destroy it. So we wrote back saying, no, we don't think you should destroy it, and actually we want it back. So they said, well, we'll take you to court to argue that why we should destroy it. So we took it to court, and a third of the ones that they had seized, the government officials even said, well, you shouldn't have seized those ones, give them back. So they'd got 33% of the decisions wrong, and the other decisions were really wrong. Like, they would say things like, well, she called him brother in a manga. Now, that's just a term for, like, an older guy in a lot of cases. Mm. It had nothing to do with incest whatsoever. And, in fact, it was quite obvious that these two were boyfriend-girlfriend, that there was no family relationship there. They banned one because it was a 99-year-old fairy who was having sex with a frog. Yep, we should not let that sort of stuff get out there in the community.
I would hate if old people started having sex with frogs in front of me, because I would be very upset.
Okay, she didn't look old. She didn't look old. She was cute.
No offense to old people, but just don't do it with a frog.
I mean, this is material that's legally acceptable in Japan. It's legally, you are legally allowed to own it in Australia. You're just not allowed to bring it across the border.
So what are you supposed to do? Teleport it in? Or?
Yes.
Make it
yes.
up. Create it.
Well, and this raises another issue, though, that creating it in Victoria, for example, would be producing refused classification material, and you face a 10-year jail sentence for drawing that picture.
Goodness.
In Victoria, if particularly if you were going to upload it or show it to a friend.
That is crazy.
So, it really is crazy laws, and they are things that we have to challenge it every time. And I think that's what I'd love to encourage listeners, that if they ever do have stuff seized by customs, either contact me or challenge it. Don't just let it go through to the keeper and just go, oh, no, I won't fight it. We have to keep standing up to them. And we have to keep arguing this.
Well, I find actually, like, that's something that people don't do, is they don't fight for their rights. They don't fight for actually what's theirs. And I think there isn't any justice unless you do fight for it. Like, and a lot of people don't do that. So it's actually really impressive that he did fight for his... Because they think, oh, well, it's a comic book or it's a manga. You shouldn't fight for this.
Yeah.
I'm like, mm-mm. You don't be taking my stuff and burning it.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, and the funniest thing was, like, his uncle found out about this. And his uncle, They're a European family and, you know, they get quite emotional about these things. And they got his uncle got very emotional that the government had seized his young nephew's comics. I mean, he's a young man. He's 24, 25. So they're at a wedding in Bali. His uncle got the mangas that he had seized and gave them to him at the wedding. And, of course, this young man brought them back in, you know, a few months later, no problem. He even showed them to customs. Customs said, yeah, they're fine. Yeah. They're fine. They're fine.
Bizarre.
So there's no objectivity to it.
Yeah.
Very
mixed messages that they're sending, different rules each time. Yeah. It's like they don't know what's really...
I know it says offensive language there, so I'm going to try not to.
Don't offend anybody.
I'm trying not to offend
anyone.
Don't
say any colours.
I'm trying, yes, all right. But, you know, like, hasn't customs got more important things to do than seizing manga comics for personal use?
Well, I can kind of see where the censorship, why they would want the censorship, but it's just they need stronger rules, like or rules that are obviously, like, guidelines where you can look at something and say, yes, that's in this, no grey area. There should never be a grey area in law.
But what would the censorship be? You know, what would it be? Like,
exactly. Who decides?
Know? Well, and okay, if we're going to say no child porn, fine. Child porn's illegal. It's illegal to do. You know, and it's illegal to make. So you've committed a crime in making that material. So that's child sexual assault material.
I understand.
But manga is not. And, you know, a lot of the comics and stuff coming out and cartoons and films coming out of Asian countries, you know, even the way they depict young people is different to the way Hollywood depicts young people. You know, they don't look like 6 foot Amazons.
I think also, like, Asians just look younger.
Yeah.
I think. Like, they just look younger.
Really? Look, we would like to set a rule saying, okay, if that image is of someone who is under 18, well, then that's illegal. If that image is of someone who's over 18, then it's legal. We just draw the line at the birth certificate instead of people saying, oh, she looks a bit young. And I've sat down at the docks and watched customs guys with magnifying glasses, and honestly, magnifying glasses, looking at magazines, going, "What do you reckon?"
Oh dear, no guidelines.
Do you reckon she's over 18?
Oh.
You think, yes, she's over 18. It's in a Hustler magazine from America. She's over 18.
She has to be.
Yeah, but she appears to maybe not.
Perceptions, and if there's no proper guidelines, this is the issue. And I think that's something that Mark McClelland, who will have an interview with shortly. He also mentioned that too. It's about perceptions and also cultural differences as well, particularly with the Japanese culture and anime and manga. And
I don't know if Mark got time to talk about it, but some of his PhD students and things, like just looking online, like going to like 4chan, .com or something, or going to some of those sites.
Sonia doesn't know what that is. You're saying big words to her.
It's the internet,
Confusing.
I'm sure some of your listeners
earlier
do know about it. But
actually,
onto those sites, you could if you could be done for possession of child porn just by visiting those sites.
It is ridiculous.
And it's just, I mean, we really need to be aware of this law and we need to challenge it.
Coming up in the evening, we do have that Mark McClelland interview, and we also have... an interview with Geeks Out. For anyone who just did tune in, we are talking about sex in the anime industry and in sci-fi industry and the censorships in Australia.
Now, if you would like to message us, you certainly can.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Welcome. This is Davros welcoming you to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Listen or be exterminated.
To Sci-Fi and Scream, I have on the line Mark McClelland. And Mark, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, obviously, and why I would have you on the show to start with?
Well, I'm a professor in the sociology department at the University of Wollongong, but my background is actually as a Japan studies person. My PhD was in Japanese studies, working on issues to do with Japanese popular culture, particularly history of sexuality, for about two decades now. So manga, animation, the two themes that you're interested in talking about tonight do feature in my research quite heavily.
And so as far as that, what has been the thing that's drawn you, particularly, I guess, to the popular culture side of things in Japanese?
Well, I originally went to Japan after I graduated on a scholarship from the Japanese government. And at that time, I was thinking about doing a PhD actually in Japanese religion. And when I got to Japan, I spent quite a lot of time in the gay bars in Tokyo. And it was in the gay bars in Tokyo that I really got to practice my Japanese, and I ended up meeting people from the queer community. Although quite a lot had been written about Japanese religion, really nobody had researched or talked about or had very much to say about how queer cultures had developed in Japan, particularly in the post-war period. And I saw an opportunity for me to use this experience that I was gaining.
Now, so getting to the topic of, in particular, hentai in Japanese popular culture, I've mentioned, I think, what do you think it is that inspires that sort of eroticism and particularly attracts Japanese girls? Can you tell us why it's so popular with females and its growth in the gay population?
I mean, the first thing I have to say is, I mean, you're talking about hentai. That is a Japanese term. But the way that hentai is used among English fans is completely different from the way it's used in Japan. I think what you're talking about is adult comics, or in Japan there's another term, ecchi, which is the pronunciation for H, which means comics which are of a very sexual nature. The term hentai in Japanese actually means perverse or perverted, and goes back to the 19th century translations of Western sexologists like Krafft Ebing, who wrote a set of case studies of different paraphilias called Psychopathia Sexualis or something like that. So the term hentai entered the Japanese daily usage in the 19th century to refer to perverse modes of sexuality, homosexuality in particular.
Okay.
I mean, I'm saying perverse with scare quotes here, because this is how these were perceived at the time. So if you talk about hentai comics to Japanese people, they do exist, but it's a very niche, very narrow range within the wider context of adult comics or ecchi comics, sexy comics, and really refers to a genre of very perverse, tentacle porn stuff. It's not a general category at all, but I think the sense in which you're using the term is the way in which it's used in the Western fandom to refer to comics with an interest in sexuality more generally.
We lose a bit in translation, I think.
When words move from one culture to another, the meanings change. So it's not the case that to refer to a certain set of comics as hentai is a mistake. It's just a development, a new development in the English-speaking world. It's not something that Japanese people would really recognise. You'd have to have this five-minute conversation with a Japanese person to establish what you're talking about.
But
certainly there's a vast range of sexual issues or sexual types, sexual scenarios, which are encompassed in Japanese adult comics, far broader than any parallel genre that you could think of in the history of comics in the West. Mm. And what's very interesting about Japan is that, we normally think about the stereotypical nerdy guy who's into these sexy comics, but in Japan there's very well-established genres written by and for women, quite innovative sexual scenarios, let's put them that way. There's two particular genres. One is in Japanese called ladies' comic or ladies' comics, and go back to the late 80s, I think, and are basically heterosexual in focus. So it's a lot of romance between men and women, but there are also very extreme extreme scenarios, which you can find in these ladies' comics, including depictions of rape, bondage and sadomasochism, incest. Yep. It's really out there. So the whole kind of like forbidden fantasy is depicted in these ladies' comics. But they are written by, on the whole, women authors, edited by women and purchased by women. That's one genre, and that's a more adult-oriented genre. And the other genre, which is very popular with a younger audience, you know, teens through to early 20s, is called boys' love, which in the Japanese context means boy-on-boy action for girls. Yeah?
Okay,
so that's something
yep.
that we don't really see in the West. Boys' love as a genre goes back to the 1970s, when the first generation of mainstream Japanese women authors and artists broke through. You know, the usual boy meets girl, boy, you know, falls in love with girl, something gets in the way, but, you know, after various troubles, you know, they get married and it's all a happy ending. They're a little bit bored with that scenario. So what these early 70s manga artists began to do was explore boy-on-boy action. Originally, often set overseas, like in 19th century boarding schools, for example, and they explored very dark themes to do with sexual abuse, oh. there were suicide, there were emotional traumas, very deep stuff. So it wasn't so much an emphasis on sex for sex's sake, but sexuality was a means of exploring many of the traumas that, you know, young people might go through mm-hmm. as they move through adolescence. And that's really how the boys' love genre started. And the yaoi kicks in later,
okay.
in the late 70s, in the early 80s. And yaoi is actually a word, it's an anagram taken from a Japanese phrase, which is yamanashi, ochi nashi, imi nashi, which means no resolution, no point, no meaning. And what's behind this is that there was a reaction in the late 70s, early 80s to the kind of really deep themes which were being explored in the early boys' love comics. You know, some girls were saying, look, we just want to see boys bonking. We want to see more boys bonking. You know, so let's put aside all the trauma and just look at beautiful boys getting it on. So that was a lot more lighthearted, far more of an emphasis on sex for sex sake. So that's why they're saying no meaning. There's no particular point to these manga. And really, the genres of Japanese boys' love have developed from there, and they've become a very well, I think you could say they're mainstream, because you can find these in bookstores. They're held by many libraries. They're not hidden, they're not underground, they're freely available. But there was research back in the 90s which suggested that the kind of readership for boys' love in Japan was about 1 million. Sexualized genres specifically aimed at women, ladies' comics and boys' love. Well, that's for sure, but you have to remember that Japan, in actual daily life, Japanese gender relations, you know, on a day-to-day basis, Japanese attitudes towards diverse sexualities such as transgenderism and homosexuality are actually very conservative. What is different about Japan and the West is that, until recently at least, in terms of fantasy space, that is, in the video games, in the manga, in the animation, these spaces are not seen as having any direct relationship to everyday life. Therefore, the rules of everyday life don't apply. Whereas in the Western context, there's a much heightened anxiety about what you see in fantasy worlds, and these can be games, actually having some kind of impact on real life. And indeed, Japan is a very safe society for women. You know, you can wander around the streets of Tokyo at midnight as a woman, and you're not necessarily going to get the kind of negative attention you might if you're doing it in Melbourne or Sydney. But in Australia, we have anxieties that might in fact take place.
Just generally, before I let you go there, Mark. Now, looking at sex in sci-fi, I know it's a very broad topic, of course, but do you have any opinions or thoughts about that?
I'd have to say, in the Western context, I actually find the representation of sex in sci-fi very disappointing. You won't find gay people there. You don't find transgender people there. You actually find normative heterosexuality being reproduced. So you're kind of thinking, gosh, we know what happened. Did gay people get bred out of the gene pool or something? Really, you
Good
don't
point.
Find very much of variety in sexuality in mainstream franchises. However, I don't know if you saw Caprica, which is the kind of prequel to...
Yes, I did. I did watch that. Unfortunately, it was cancelled, but did watch the first season.
Well, it's very interesting that it should be cancelled, because I actually watched that on DVD, and it does actually explore homosexuality. Mm. And what I found so fabulous about that, the way they dealt with homosexuality, is that it was normalised, it was naturalised. The main mafioso guy is married to a man. There was no stigmatisation of homosexuality in that show. It had been naturalised, normalised, mm. simply part of the furniture. That, you know, men and women get married, men and men get married, this is what I've been waiting for years to see in a science fiction programme, a future in which, you know, your choice of sexual partner is normalised. It's like as normal as, you know, preferring tea over coffee or something. It's just part of the furniture.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a tremendous innovation. And, of course, that series gets canned. But I'd have to say, on the whole, I think the way that Western science fiction treats sexuality is way conservative.
OK, Mark. Well, look, thank you so much for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream this evening.
No worries.
It's brilliant. Thank you. And good luck with the future. Let's hope you get a chance to actually not be so impeded with your studies, and so therefore you can inform others just what is out there.
Well, we live in hope.
Sex and Scream, Sci-Fi and Sex, tonight here on Joy 94.9. This is Sonia. Mitch is here too.
Hello.
And we have Fiona Patton.
Hello.
Hello.
That was a sexy one.
That was a crow, actually, wasn't it? That wasn't a scream.
That's a little bit like me in bed as well.
That was not me in bed.
Yeah. Oh, go on. No.
So that was Mark McClelland, we spoke to earlier, Professor of Gender and Sexuality Studies at the School of Sciences, Media and Communication, University of Wollongong. Bring it on.
Mouthful,
Thanks so much there, Mark.
It's a little hive of dissent down there.
Oh,
it's
goodness.
Very interesting what goes on down the south coast.
Things go on down below,
place.
Don't they?
They do.
We did get a message during the break.
Japan has worshipped phalluses and vaginas for centuries in its religion. We've worshipped a bloke who was tortured and born without sex. And that's from Robert in Caulfield. Bless him.
Yes. I think that actually very elegantly puts our censorship system in place, doesn't it? Violence, absolutely no problem. Mm. Sex, massive problem.
Massive guilt trips and shameful feelings and so on.
There was this film, it was one of the biggest films, called Pirates, and I must say I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was a spoof. It was the Johnny Depp's kind of X-rated version of Johnny Depp's Pirates.
Oh. And these are porn parodies.
Yeah, yes. These are porn parodies.
I love this porn parodies.
One of the first, and like it was the first one to use CGI, like, and to use
goodness.
Really good
porn.
In porn.
Yeah. Mm.
And it was and the CGI was, well, I don't know, they probably pirated the CGI because it was a pirate skeletons fighting, and
goodness.
Then a few porn stars would get in with their sabers and fight, and it was all really exciting. In the Australian version, we had to cut all of that out.
Oh.
We could show them bursting into rooms and having double penetration sex, but we couldn't show the ghosts fighting on the top deck.
Oh.
And we couldn't show the sort of the underwater scenes because...
Oh, what were they doing underwater?
Fighting.
Oh.
That's what pirates do.
We could show the sex scenes underwater. We just couldn't show the fighting scenes. But it was...
bizarre.
It was bizarre. Yeah. I mean, we have it the other way around. We're allowed to show sex, but we couldn't show any of the... Well, it shows how, you know, how much porn I've seen, because I find that the CGI was the more interesting bits of the porn.
And those are the bits they cut out. That's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of that parody porn, particularly, I think, sci-fi and particularly fantasy and genre, dildo baggins.
Oh,
and
I know. There's like so
like
many
that.
Lord of the Ring.
They're just silly and nonsense.
Doctor Who?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, there's so many. Harry Potter.
I can't
remember the Harry Potter one. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So funny.
But, I mean, in science fiction in general, you've got... I mean, we talked about it off air. The Star Trek franchise is pretty good in some respects for showing some different types of sex. Perhaps not full on, but at least you get an idea that they're having it.
Yeah. Well, I did read an article the other day in, like, Science America that says you shouldn't have sex in zero gravity.
You could get pregnant.
No, well...
Oh, well, you don't get pregnant.
Well, they're not sure what the sperm does, because the sperm gets all confused in zero gravity.
Airborne.
It doesn't know where to go, you know, and you might get pregnant, but it might be only like the bad sperm, because I think there's like killer sperms and...
So usually on Earth, those bad sperm swim down, but in space they swim up, and then you get a funny looking baby.
That's right.
Maybe that's where the alien queen really
And then the baby
from.
Comes out
Mitch?
Upside down.
Yeah. Yes, Mitch, tell us about your true parentage.
Well, it all began in space.
Yes.
Sexy. Yeah, look, there's some the great stuff there. I mean, Caprica was something Mark talked about, how they had the first... as far as sex and sexuality goes, the first outly homosexual character in the prequel to Battlestar Galactica, and they didn't make a big deal of it, as he talked about normalising sex. And, you know, this is the whole thing.
See, isn't it weird? Like, in sci-fi, you'd think, you know, sexuality and playing with gender and playing with sexuality would just be a natural, because you're playing with body types, you're playing with all of these other different parts of humanity or of bodies, not necessarily human bodies, why you wouldn't play with that a lot more in sci-fi. Mm. I don't know, in a few books I've seen it played with, but...
More so in books. I mean, yeah. William Burroughs was over the top with Wild Boys and so on. They're just... It's constant gay sex, gay male sex on different planets. It's just constant.
And what book was this? And
right,
how
Mitch.
Do I find it? You can't order it online, that's
no,
for sure.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Well, you could, but don't try and bring it in through customs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I think one of the things is they probably don't want to encourage people. Like, encourage people to be different, maybe? I don't know.
But isn't that... I mean, you know, you'd think the sci-fi genre, like, a lot of that is about celebrating difference and celebrating diversity and, you know, that's what I got from my Spock messages.
Mm. I mean, look at Spock. I mean, the guy who's playing Spock, Zachary Quinto, in the new reboots, he's actually an out gay man in the real world, but he can't play a gay character in the Star Trek franchise universe as such. It just seems odd that the only people seem to be having fun is aliens.
Kirk
come on,
and, yeah.
Who wants Spock to come out?
Kirk and Spock weren't gay?
No, you're thinking fan fiction.
I didn't know that. I swear I saw them, like, kissing and stuff.
That wasn't a fan fiction you were looking at.
I have to stop doing that.
Yeah.
It was the porn.
It's addictive.
It was the porn version of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, sadly in Australia, I think our censorship is just going so far backwards when our ability to explore these sorts of avenues and explore these sorts of fantasies and share them with so many people, particularly online and, you know, fan fiction and a lot of the sort of con play and things like that. I mean, we're doing some really interesting things and really bending it up. And yet our governments seem to be getting more and more frightened about that. And, you know, when we're talking about putting some really young people into really dangerous positions, I mean, I was at that conference.
The one you mean.
That convention.
There was a lot of con play there and things like that. But you've got 17 and 18-year-olds exploring a lot of aspects of their sexuality using these avenues.
And they want to feel safe and accepted.
Yep.
Yeah, you know.
But the minute they try and pretend that they're a 16-year-old and they might be just 18, they're actually breaking the law.
Mm.
They are actually committing a sexual assault.
Mm. This is with the Lolita?
This is the Lolita stuff, yep.
Mm. That's true. Interesting.
Well, I think we should quickly cut to the interview with Geeks Out.
Geeks Out in New York.
As well.
Yeah.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Well, I think it's the big excitement coming up with Dreamweaver.
Yep.
We're really keen to find out how that's going. It's looking great on the social media.
The art is still coming in. We're going to have a really amazing selection. The word went out far and wide, and people are continuing to turn in really inspired creative works. The enthusiasm with which Sigourney Weaver was received as a subject for this art was really inspiring and encouraged us to stay excited about this. There's really a different sort of affection and admiration for Sigourney Weaver that comes into play. And it really is, you can see it in the art. And I think it'll be a great show. It'll be a great night.
One of our artists actually is Australian, too.
Really?
His name is Jackson Ether.
He's a Sydneyan. Sydneysian. Sydneyite.
Like, you forget actually how much they're, like, when it comes to Sigourney, how many different things there are.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's all Ghostbusters,
exactly,
of course.
To draw focus from.
The moment she ran around in the rain with, what's his name, Mel Gibson. That movie. I mean,
You're Living Dangerously. Yeah, that's it.
That's the one.
Put up on the Geeks Out site a blog post of YouTube clips of like Sigourney the woman in interviews and being celebrated and on the sort of like real life side beyond the filmography, and getting sort of lost in a YouTube maze of clips about somebody is really, really fun. And there were a number of really great sort of outlandish interviews from the 80s that she suffered through as a good sport that I really thought about putting up there. So I think it was as fun as it is to revisit sort of the filmography and see all the various roles she's played in her long career. It's also really interesting to find out, you know, how dedicated an advocate and an activist she really, like, legitimately has been for many, many years. And sort of interesting, articulate, slightly frosty, but in a fun way, interviews that she's become sort of known for.
But frosty.
She's a stand-up lady. And I think that frostiness is, you know, maybe that's not the right term. She went to Yale. She's a New Yorker. So that's probably it. Contact has been made, and I think that it has been impressed upon her that she's got a lot of friends in the queer geek community.
And so how long does it run for? When does it open?
It's this Thursday.
This Thursday coming up.
Yeah, it's a one-night-only show like it was with To K Back the Night. Mm-hmm. Everything will be auctioned off during the event or raffled off during the event. The only opportunity people will have to actually see the art in person, but the website will be up for anybody who wants to appreciate Sigourney in the privacy of their own home. It's a raffle, so if the guests who attend the event can purchase raffle tickets, and a winner will be chosen from the tickets for each piece.
So does the money raised go to a specific charity?
The money goes towards our event and programming. Starting to raise funds again for New York Comic Con 2013. Ooh. We also have been really lucky this year to expand a little bit outside of New York. We'll be doing a convention in Chicago called C2E2, the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo.
We're looking at sex in science fiction, sexuality and that type. It's a very broad subject. It's not fair, I know. But what would you guys like to say and...
You can't have one without the other. In the sexuality front, I'm obviously impressed with, you know, the way things are going, you know, with LGBT visibility in comics. But I still think that, at least in comics, sex is still, like, it's definitely directed towards fanboys. And we were talking earlier about the Fearless Defenders title with Valkyrie and some of the other characters. And it's just, you know, a boob show for males ages 18 to 25, but there's definitely, like, it's on the one hand really conservative, that and the fact that it's just giving that point of view, but it's on the other hand, you know, fantastical, I'd say, in the way that, you know, the way that those fantasies play out. And moving on to the fantasy front, at least I'm impressed that they do have the relationship with Renly Baratheon and Loras Tyrell in Game of Thrones was something that was alluded to in the original novel, but HBO has decided to kind of, you know, bring it to the forefront, along with the, you know, the other boobs and you know, the other sex that goes on in Westeros.
Yeah. There's a female character. How long is it before she takes her robes off? It's normally about 30 seconds. It seems to be.
Speaking generally, I think that sex and sexuality in science fiction can be really, really incredibly exciting, because science fiction being sort of speculative fiction, you're already meant to broaden your horizons and be imaginative and creative and think past sort of the boundaries of what you know. And if you are able to, if the artist responsible, the writer or the illustrator or the filmmaker or what have you, is able to add eroticism into that, even if it's an attraction that you weren't necessarily prone to having, then I think that can be a really, really exciting addition to good science fiction. I think also if you're experiencing science fiction, or if you're experiencing comics, you're just not necessarily, I don't want to say you're not looking for sex, but you may not expect something sexy or something provocative or something unusual. So it doesn't have to be so much or so blatant, because just a little bit can be so surprising. I don't know why. Maybe I'm alone in thinking my mind doesn't necessarily go to sexy places in sci-fi or in comics. It's a little bit divorced. But I think that when you drop it in the right way, it can have a great effect.
We do have this
there's this interesting quote-unquote parody industry that's kind of popped up in porn. Recently, they've done a Wonder Woman parody, and everybody's really impressed by the quality that goes into it, because the costume is, I don't know if you've seen pictures of it. Geeksout.org is our website where we post all of our events, as well as events that anybody who's a member can post. So there's stuff that's beyond just what we're hosting ourselves. Patrick, what's our Twitter? Geeksout. This is John O'Jarrett from Geeksout United States, and I just want to let everybody know who is listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9 that I'm imagining all of you listeners naked right now, and I hope that that's the way you enjoy your fantastic radio down under. This is Patrick Bianco from Geeks Out in the United States, and you are listening to the sexy, sultry Dean and Sonia of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
This is Sex and Squeam, Sci-Fi and Sex, and you're listening to Sonia on Joy 94.9. We had some great chats there with Geeks Out. That was part of an interview with them earlier in the week. And thanks to Dina Curry from Guy-Fi Podcast for joining in. And they talked about a bit about what they thought about some sex in sci-fi. And of course, Sigourney Weaver comes up there naturally, as she would in Ripley. I mean, can't get more sort of hyper-metaphorically sexual than Alien. Aliens franchise, I think. So thanks to the guys, Patrick and Jono from Geeks Out in New York. We'll play the full interview in a podcast very soon.
That's true. And yeah, I think it was a really good discussion about censorship and the way this country looks at things or censors things or bans things outside of the country. So
yeah, I think
so
the one
much.
Thing that's interesting is an Australian film has never been banned in any other country, which I think, you know,
seriously.
We're vanilla.
And there's no chocolate in that vanilla. No chocolate sprinkles there. Look, we had a message as well from Sarah Noble Park. She says, "Hello, Joy. Love the show. I did not know it was hard to get stuff in here." I guess she means get stuff from overseas into the country.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, if it does get stopped, I think we really need to, you know, to challenge people.
Yes, exactly.
I enjoy challenging people.
Yeah. So. We find you challenging.
Yeah. And people find me challenging. It's
He's
great.
Challenged.
And he was challenged today when I asked him to come in. So thank
I know,
you
yeah.
so
it's
much for coming
again.
On board, Mitch. Now, next week, we've got an interview, I should say, with not one, not two, but maybe even five Doctor Who's. That's right. They're going to be in Melbourne. So that'll
oh
be exciting.
God.
Doctor Who, don't ask me which one.
I
but
don't care.
Sylvester McCoy. Peter Davidson, yeah, the list goes on. We also have an interview with Noah Hathaway, also known as Atreyu from The Neverending Story. So that's very exciting.
Whoa.
He's going to be at Supernova too in Melbourne and Brisbane coming up in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So that's wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hi. Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Sci-Fi and Squeam.
From 10 p.m.
to 11 p.m. on
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Join us.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.